from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
It's just an illusion.
Yes, it is Fresh Friday. It's here on the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Happy Fresh Friday to all of you. As you heard in Heather's newscast, the Mariners are just one win away from making the playoffs. And how are you feeling about the possibility of finally ending the postseason drought?
I love it. I love it. I am happy, but I am more so happy for those that are diehard Mariner fans.
Yes.
And I'm happy for the Mariners organizations, for the people that work in that building. I know that today, well, when it happens, one game away, it is got to be special for me, for you. So it's more special for you than it is for me. I care, but I'm not like some of you diehard fans that watch 160 games a year.
You know, my youngest son, this is true. The first word he ever spoke was Edgar.
There you go.
During the chant for Edgar Martinez during the year when we won 116 games.
There it is.
Well, we're going to talk about that today. Also, coming up on What's New at 10, it's going to be another spirited conversation with Michael Medved. As always, we invite you to join us on our State Roofing text line, 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO.
Time to give the people what they want. Ursula's top news stories of the day brought to you by Economy Fence Center.
So George W. Bush was president at the time. The average cost of a home in our state was only $180,000. And Shrek was the biggest movie.
It's going to be champagne wishes and caviar dreams from now on.
And if you were listening to a music station, this was the most popular song on the radio.
There it is.
Okay, it was so long ago, I don't even remember this song. Yes, the year was 2001, and you have to go all the way back to that year for the last time the Seattle Mariners were in the playoffs. And as of right now, the team is one win away, or Baltimore is one loss away, from ending the postseason drought. And after last night's win over the Rangers in extra innings, manager Scott Servais said, the M's goals are much bigger than just making the playoffs.
The goal is to win the World Series. And it's not just to end the drought. We will end the drought tomorrow. We're going to. And it's a beautiful thing. And then it's on to the next goal. And this team's got a lot of high goals.
The Mariners are playing the Oakland A's tonight. And it's going to be a sold-out crowd. They've already got the fireworks ready. It feels very, very different as we head, we're in this last day of September heading into October.
This is good stuff, right? Like, this is one of those where the Mariners continue to win one-run ball games. As a matter of fact, they lead the major leagues in one-run ball games, where they win a game by just one run. And they've won 31 games this season, and that is a Major League Baseball season high for a team. We decided to have Rick Riz on our show at the beginning of the season, and it has obviously been a good luck charm. So I think the takeaway is every season we need to have a segment where we talk to Rick Riz once a week. Hey, paid off. Good stuff.
Chef, I know you're a big baseball fan, and I want to talk to Nick, too, because for you guys to see this happen, and you have young kids,
yeah,
it's kind of a really special time.
It's very surreal, actually, because I can't actually believe it. Like, even when the magic number was 3 yesterday, I'm like, Dad, don't get your hopes up. I know this. No, I feel like I'm living in an alternate universe. The last time this happened, let's see, I was 18 years old. I was working at Ezell's Famous Chicken. I had not purchased a cell phone yet. I had a beeper. I mean, so it's been an entire generation, and this was such a huge part of my childhood growing up, was the Mariners, and it feels good, but it doesn't feel real yet. I think
exactly.
I think the first time I see those packed stands and people just absolutely losing their minds, once we know, that's when it'll sink in. So it's going to be an amazing weekend coming up in a couple weeks coming ahead.
Yes, and the M's now hold the second wild card spot, so they're 1.5 games behind Toronto. if the M's get to the first wild card spot, they would host three playoff games at T-Mobile Park, which would be pretty dang cool.
I can't wait to be having a discussion with somebody, and or maybe I might get a text on the text line like, yo, the last time in 2001, I was at the game and I was FaceTiming with my buddy and I was telling him, yo, the Mariners are nice. If you don't get what I just said, because there's not possible for you to FaceTime in 2001, but sometimes, you know, you got that one friend that tells a little bit of a lie from time to time.
Speaking of which, more than 190 texts were manually deleted from an iPhone of former Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan in the months after the city's controversial response to racial justice protests and rioting in June of 2020. That is according to the latest filings in a federal lawsuit. NBC News reports that factory resets were also done on the phones of six other city officials in the fall of 2020, and that wiped out thousands of other text messages. It is a new 32-page report that was filed in U.S. District Court in Seattle this week. Attorneys for businesses and residents who are suing the city for damages, they are alleging that Seattle allowed the destruction during that time, and also the creation of CHOP, where two people were killed. In a motion, the attorneys say the former mayor, former police chief Carmen Best, the fire chief Harold Scoggins, and several other city officials deleted thousands of text messages after the case began. And the attorneys say, even knowing that by law they were required to preserve those text messages, the city attorney is defending the city, G, but is not commenting on these latest filings.
Well, they, outside of their legacy and outside of their name and outside of how we will discuss them and what they will be remembered by, they will be remembered by these erasing of the text messages manually, period. But other than that, what else can happen? Nothing. Maybe the city, when the lawsuit is happening, it might help others with their lawsuit against the city. But as far as Jenny Durkan or Carmen Best is concerned, all these erased text messages, nothing can happen. You can't go. I mean, it's not like you can go to jail for it. You know what I mean? You can't go to jail for anything like that. And it is what it is. I'll just say this. The only time you erase text messages is when you don't want somebody to see it. Period. And so we're not going to sit here and play this game of, oh, the phone was set by default. It was set to erase this amount of text after a number of times. Come on, man. See, when we talk about these news stories, I hate it when people just try to pretend as if we, the citizens out here, don't have common sense. We have common sense. We're not dumb. Right. You erase the damn text.
Well, Durkan previously denied intentionally deleting any of them or changing the settings on her phone. And also, I think that her people are saying, well, the city has actually recovered or recreated many of those texts. But
not the manually deleted ones.
Exactly. So there are some that are missing. You said, well, what can happen? Well, right now there are lawsuits. So what can happen is that that would be evidence used or evidence that would be hard to see now that they're deleted. But, I mean, it doesn't look good.
That's what I just said.
Yeah.
I said the text would be helpful with the lawsuits against the city.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So, as far as former Chief Carmen Best, she initially said that she didn't know how her texts were lost, but then she testified in another case and said that she would actually go in and sometimes delete her texts in bulk after seeing that she didn't think that there was important information in them. I'm glad that the reporter, Lewis Cam, is still looking into this, and he spent a lot of time looking into this, and it is problematic, and it is against the law. So whether or not they face something, it is important that we see that something is done and things are changed so that it doesn't continue to happen.
Wait, well, do you think anything is going to happen to Jenny Durkan?
I don't know.
I don't think anything's going to happen. And people listening right now, nobody really truly believes deep down anything is going to happen to Jenny Durkan for erasing text. That lady, wasn't she a federal prosecutor at one point? She's probably smarter than the people that would even try something. She knows nothing's going to happen to her. We can sit here and we can talk about it. We'll talk about it on the show. We can talk about it in 2 weeks. We can talk about it in a year. The only thing we're going to talk about is, oh, yeah,
Remember? She deleted the text. That's it.
So what should happen? Should they pursue her criminally?
No. What are you going to charge her with?
It's against the law. So violating the law that requires you to keep those texts. So that's why I think it's going to be in civil court where we see the most damage.
Sure.
Is anyone going to prosecute the former president for flushing White House documents down the toilet? Of course not. Nobody pursues these cases. And people who destroy evidence, they know this. They know this. They know that they're never going to face prosecution for it. They're never going to see any sort of damages from it. And the potential embarrassment of those records being released or crimes actually being charged from them, it's a win-win for them. Why not do it?
Yeah. True. Which is why I say again, I guess the most damage would be to their reputations. An Olympia woman is now being threatened with fines for having what's being deemed as a political sign hanging inside her home. The Homeowners Association told Shirley Pavel that she cannot have her Black Lives Matter art on a wall, again, inside her home, because it can be seen from outside her house. The HOA had actually changed the rules and added that political or social action signs that can be seen from the outside cannot be displayed. As Cairo 7 TV's Gwen Baumgardner reports, Pavel feels like she is being singled out.
How did the board go from you can't have outside signs or signs outside your building to determining that they have a legal right to determine what I have in my home?
She feels targeted, pointing to other neighbors in clear violation. At one home, a Trump doormat. Another, a thin blue line flag. Shirley plans to appeal the violation, but says she's disappointed it's come to this.
I cannot adequately express how tired I am, how much it hurts me that my family does not feel comfortable here, because they are people of color, too.
And this is unfortunate, and this is probably the reasons why there's a lot of you out here that don't like HOAs. And the one thing I'll agree, even though I love HOAs, because I love to keep the neighborhood nice, I think that it does, but on the negative side of the HOAs, you have petty grievances that happen within HOAs. Why? I don't know. Because they're ran by people, and people can be petty. And whoever the president or vice president or secretary or sergeant at arms or whoever it is for this HOA, they are for some reason deciding to target this lady. This lady has the Black Lives Matter sign inside of her homes. And according to what the rules say, you know, I wanted to make sure, because I wanted to see where the signs were. I had to see that. But according to the rules, it says, quote, anything displayed from inside a window facing outside, so you can't have it in your window, and also that can be seen from the roadway or neighboring units. So as of this Saturday, Ursula, if she doesn't have that sign down, she will get charged $50 a day, every single day. I don't know what else to say.
Well,
petty.
She points out, though, that one of her neighbors has a Trump welcome mat? And then she is saying that she's being singled out because of the particular art that she has, and it's Black Lives Matter. But other people have, quote unquote, political signs that seem to be okay. And again, this is inside your home. In my opinion, what's inside your home should be no HOA's business. I mean, and so you talk about you like HOAs. This is the reason why I dislike HOAs. And we talked about this in a past show, but some of these rules, you say it's just being petty. You're okay with someone telling you what you can and cannot have inside your home?
Hold on. I love HOAs, right? Just like I'm not going to take bad examples, and this here is a bad example of what's happening at the HOA. But let me make this clear. I'm not going to take a bad example and just go ahead and make it a sweeping statement on all HOAs. They're petty. This is awful. This is wrong. But that doesn't mean that all HOAs are this way.
Or you're not going to spin this into an entire argument about how Democrats are persecuted across the country? This one instance here?
No. This is a bad situation. I'm not taking up.
I guess
for
maybe
the
maybe we this shouldn't even make the news. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that at all. It should definitely make the news. And the HOA, who did not comment, should be embarrassed. They should absolutely be embarrassed. And I'm glad that this lady is speaking out.
You know why this makes the news? Is because this woman can likely not afford an attorney. So her only recourse is to go to the media instead of having someone take this case up in court. Because if you're, you know, you own a home in a trailer park, you don't have an attorney to go sue your HOA, because that's not a pro bono case that they're going to take on. This is why we're hearing about this. And it is ridiculous.
Okay, so we're going to squeeze one more in. Poor Russell Wilson, once again, the former Seahawks quarterback, is one of the top trending stories, and unfortunately, it's not for anything good.
You ever done anything dangerous?
Well, now it is this cringy TikTok video where he's trying to sell all of us on his favorite sandwich.
Hey, you want to split this Subway sandwich? It is my signature sandwich. It's called the Danger Witch, and it's dangerously good. Be careful, though. It's spicy.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. Twitter and all of social media has lit him up. I looked, and in a couple different publications, including the Seattle Times, it was the top trending sports story. I was like, and then you told me recently that he's been booed the last couple of games on this particular TikTok. One commenter wrote that he delivers that Russell Wilson delivers the entire monologue like a serial killer who's calmly talking to someone he tied to a chair with their mouth taped shut. I mean, people are being so cruel.
Yeah, they are. They are really being cruel on this. Yes, big time on social media. But the biggest problem in this, and Chef and I, we talked about this earlier, and this is one of the things that really got to me. Like, who? Like, I don't understand. Like, when all the money, Subway, you got a lot of money in your advertising department. Which one of you guys signed off and said, you know, it would be a really good idea if Russell is chewing as he's talking? Like, who the heck thought that that was a good idea?
But who on, and who on Russ's PR team thought this would be a good idea for him?
Well,
is someone telling him, like, let's not do that one? That's just going to feed into this whole idea that you're kind of dweeby.
if you have a PR team, though, and you made you pay their salary, this salary, everybody on your PR team, you pay their salary. Your job is not to sit here and tell me no. Your job is to tell, even if you tell me yes, or you tell me, well, how about it? Let's do it this way.
I think that might be the problem. Some people need to start saying, you know, you don't need that money. This is not going to help you. Let's work on the brand. Let's, like, skip this one.
Yeah. It's getting something. Hey, coming up next here on the G and Ursula Show, Hannah Scott, ooh-wee, our Cairo News reporter, will join us next to talk about racial disparities here in the state of Washington when it comes to home ownership. We do that next. G and Ursula.
To the G and Ursula Show. As always, we love connecting with you. 888-973-5476. 888-973 is our state roofing text line. We've also posted a bunch of new stuff on our G and Ursula Show Facebook page. If you haven't done so already, make sure you like us and follow us there too. People of color would have to buy 140,000 homes to just catch up with the level of home ownership among white people in our state. That is one of the sobering findings of a new report from the State Department of Commerce. And we get details from Cairo News Radio's Hannah Scott.
The ambitious report is the result of 9 months of work by the State Home Ownership Disparities Work Group, which the legislature directed to prepare the report. The big takeaway?
The big takeaway is that there is enormous disparities in home ownership, and that our history of racial discrimination and policies like redlining, like the way the GI Bill was not administered fairly contributed to that.
State Department of Commerce Director Lisa Brown.
Home equity is a primary form of wealth in American society, and it has been unequally distributed, and there have been barriers. And so we end up with the shocking and awful statistic that white home ownership rates in Washington state are nearly twice the rate of black home ownership rates.
As for how things got to this point,
there were very specific policies that prevented people of color from living in certain neighborhoods or prevented resources from being distributed in a fair way. And then that becomes intergenerational. And those policies have to be actively deconstructed.
The report includes a dozen recommendations considered actionable that fall into five big buckets. First,
increase the supply of affordable housing. We need local governments to step up and look at zoning regulations, even permitting and things that might slow down the construction of affordable housing. Zoning for single family only is part of the problem. Direct home ownership assistance really works. Down payment programs and other programs that connect people directly to a home. We're looking at land trusts. Improving lending and financial products is a whole category. Avoiding foreclosure.
Brown says the ultimate goal here is
make eliminating racial disparities in home ownership a goal for Washington state.
Hannah Scott, Cairo News Radio.
Wow. Just another a report on real news that has been there. And for some reason, I understand, like some are uncomfortable when they hear those things. And so it's just a reminder, Ursula, about where we are right now. And in order to make it right, I don't know that the society or the government is really ever really ready to make it right. Like, and I don't think making it right is affordable housing. I think that's the buzzword. We have talked about it before. I believe it was a place up north in Everett when they were like, hey, it's going to be affordable apartments. And I think the rent was like $1,500 a month, right? So what's considered affordable are kind of a good deal, but it's people are struggling. We did a report last week talking about the median income of a head of a household here in the city of Seattle, where it is over $120,000 for an Asian person that is head of household here in the city of Seattle. For a white person, it was like $110,000 is the median income. And for a black person that is head of household in the city of Seattle, it is $41,000. When you have that huge of a wealth gap, it is hard to play catch up. There's more than just going to have to be like, hey, we'll allow you to go to City College for free or an education for free. Sometimes you really have to make it really easy to make up. And like, hey, here's a down payment for that home. And you know where that's going right now. But I don't know. I don't know that there will ever be a time that there is a legitimate way to catch up.
Well, they talked about those different buckets to increase the supply of affordable housing. I mean, we just came off this, you know, these record increases in housing prices. So, like you said, what is affordable housing anymore? There's no such thing as a starter home in this region. A starter home just unbelievably is easily over $500,000 if you're lucky. I mean, it's basically, you know, something that needs to be torn down if you're going to be anywhere in the Seattle area. It was a few months ago when we talked about, well, where can you still find something that is quote unquote affordable? Maybe in Burien. They talked about Edmonds. Edmonds is no longer affordable for most people. You know, how do you try to make up for some of these things that happened in the past? And as you said, there are people who are very uncomfortable with that and want to say, well, that was so long ago. How come you can't just stop talking about what happened in the past? These practices like redlining and she mentioned the GI Bill and these other things that happened to make it really virtually impossible for people like your parents to buy a home. I mean, that has impacts for generations. So what can you do? Change the zoning. Yes. I mean, and I was at one point one of those people that said, well, you know, I don't want that in my neighborhood. I don't want to have the mixed housing in my neighborhood because, and I mean, mixed housing in, we're talking about triplexes and multiplexes in areas where it's mostly single family. But nothing is going to change as long as it continues to be something that is not accessible, especially for certain segments of our population.
Over time, right? Like most people. You know, because I feel like sometimes when we are having these discussions and when people are listening, they're like, what are you talking about? I don't care if a person is white or black, or it doesn't matter. This isn't about opinion. Opinion did not get the wage gap from where the median head of household in the city of Seattle is $41,000. That wasn't because of opinion. That was because of policy. Okay, I want to be very clear about that. And then for those say, well, that was the past. Yes, in the past, it is still here today because we are having such a hard time closing that gap. And the next thing, just because you are, if you're white or black or anybody, nobody is saying that you did not work hard. You might be a white person and you grew up poor. I believe that you worked hard. You did everything you could to work hard. That is not what we're saying. But I want to be real crystal clear in saying this. If you are white in the city of Seattle, there is not a place that you could not live because you were white.
Yeah, purely because there of your
was
skin color.
There was not a loan that you could not get because you were white. That is an opinion. That is fact, yes. And that is a matter of the policies that were laid out. So when you hear these discussions, it's not saying that you didn't work hard. And one last point I want to make, because I get these messages to me all the time, and they say, gee, well, look at you. You worked hard. Man, I had to almost win the lottery of life to get to where I am right now. So,
yeah.
Thank you, Hannah Scott, for that report. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff in the 206 expresses what we get a lot when we have these topics. And he says, I would like to think in 2022, we should be completely done with white and black comparisons. The 1950s are over. Just the thought. 1950s was not that long ago. And it takes some of those policies take multiple generations to overcome.
Civil Rights Bill was in the mid 60s, y'all. And you know what was in the Civil Rights Bill. So, hey, coming up next on the G and Ursula Show, we need to talk remote work. This article stood out to me at 3-something in the morning because it was like, whoa. So for everybody that's working from home, something might happen in about 10 years because of the working from home. I'll explain that next. G and Ursula. Gene Ursula Show. Happy Fresh Fridays to all of you. Michael Medved will come in and join the show. Look forward to talking to Michael. Our friendly conservative will join the show. But right now, we need to talk. This morning at like 3-7 in the morning, I don't know why I was awake, and I did not go back to sleep, by the way. But I read this in Fortune, and here you go. Remote work could be the reason you don't have a job in 10 years. What they're saying in this article right now is that workers who have been enjoying the working from home and that ability to do that, to just go downstairs or go to the office or wherever you want to do work at home and just be able to log in from anywhere, that's a good thing, right? You can do it from anywhere, right? Well, they're saying that companies, which we all agree that companies are always looking to save money. They're always looking to make more of a profit. Ursula, they're basically saying that don't be surprised when you start seeing companies truly go out there and outsource for these jobs. Companies haven't yet internationally outsourced many jobs that require higher education, but adding maybe that call center jobs, the remote first jobs, they might be looking to do that. If you look at places like the people that code for Google and Facebook, they talk about how they were able and are able to live from anywhere in the United States and do their jobs. Well, there is a good possibility that the same job that you have right now, that you're working from home, a company might say, you know what, G, you're at home in Tacoma, but I can pay this person in Texas half of what we pay you. I'm not trying to be funny about this.
Or
this is a legitimate, scary thing, y'all. I'm being real serious.
Oh, no. I know. And this Fortune article actually quoted someone from the MIT Sloan School of Business who teaches a course on the future of work. And, yeah, I mean, it makes sense that there are certain jobs that if you go to India or you go to the Philippines, you outsource these jobs, you will get people who can do it well, who can also speak English well and will do it for so much less. And sadly, and I think you lose out on so much, first of all, for a company. I mean, yesterday I was dealing with something. Actually, I had to call a pharmaceutical company, and actually I made two calls yesterday, and both times I could tell I was talking to someone in the Philippines. I usually ask. I'm like, hey, because I can usually detect the accent, and then we get into how I'm part Filipino, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, many companies are doing that. And if you're not coming in anyway, and it's just basically someone getting the job done, and you're not adding to the, whether it's the camaraderie or whether it's the brainstorming or whatever else that, that is seen as a benefit from coming in, why wouldn't they just outsource if they can make more money and have a stronger bottom line?
I know that there are some that might believe that this is fear mongering, and they might believe that, oh, this is company's idea to try to scare people into truly getting back to work. Okay, hold on. I understand why you might think that, but you at least have to look at the logistical side of this and say, if you, on one hand, you agree that companies are always trying to save money and always trying to make more money and always not giving you a raise. If on one hand you say that, then why would they not on the next step be able to outsource your job? If you're going to be coming from Tacoma, we're going to go get somebody from Texas.
Yeah. The reality, though, is this possibility of outsourcing always existed even before remote work.
But what we did not have is managers considering it for jobs that they hadn't in the past. I mean, 8-10 years ago, a company I worked for was outsourcing all of our graphic design, a lot of our coding to people across the world. But you didn't have people within a lot of major American corporations sitting down and thinking to themselves, okay, I have 10,000 people here who perform jobs that can be done from anywhere. Their jobs don't require any level of local knowledge. They don't require any knowledge of, say, local laws or ordinances in order to perform them. And if you're not, like, let's say, an attorney or an architect that has to know something about the local laws, yeah, absolutely, it could go away. The only problem with this that I have is it's going to be the low-end workers who get outsourced, when in reality, it is actually middle management that could be most easily outsourced, because your job is to what?
Okay, that's funny.
Monitor progress, take a look at the dashboard, and make decisions. Anyone can do that by looking at a spreadsheet. And if all your employees are remote, why not the boss?
All I know is when I get out here and I talk about me going to get my massage in Puyallup, or I talk about the food that I ate down in Point Rustin, and I talk about all the places, we talk about all the places that we go and eat at and hang out at in the community. Don't you relate to us on the radio when we talk about our community? You can't really outsource that. You can't. You can't really outsource.
That'll be our argument if they say, well, gee, Ursula, we found a way to cut expenses. We're just going to have some folks do it from the Philippines. It's like, hey, wait a minute.
Find out how that works for you. Back to Starbucks. I would much rather go in and talk to the partners and or the baristas and get my coffee than come to work and just have the machine give me my coffee. I got to tell you, the coffee here at the machine, it's really good here at work, but I would really like to get my coffee from that person. Coming up next on the Gene Ursula Show, Michael Medved joins us. It is Gene Ursula.